Pichana Pahala Pahagiravare Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjanaya. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjanaya. Yamuna Tira Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Bhagavad Gita Sutera Siddhi Sri Shrimati Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaved Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Guru Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gananga Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Sattvaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Kanamana Sarasvati and Gorbanda training, which is your Shrimad Bhagavata Hare Krishna. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming here. It doesn't look like we have too many guests today. Is anybody new here for the first time? I don't think so. No. Okay. And secondly, I'd like to thank Mother Mukhya for all the diligence that she has put in. And believe me, it's not easy because one side or the other is always going to be criticizing whatever you do. This COVID situation is very, very difficult. And if you really don't like anything or any of the rules, don't go and talk to her. Talk to me. You know, and you, I think you all know I have some strong opinions on things. So, it's a very, very serious situation. Throughout Florida is the epicenter of COVID in the United States right now. And Alachua County has had the highest numbers it's ever had the last few weeks. So be careful. Use common sense. And it's really unfortunate that we can't, you know, celebrate these festivals just to the fullest, having, you know, 3,000 people here at Janmashtami and just having just a wonderful celebration. It's a little bit muted, but that doesn't mean that internally that we can't have full appreciation for Krishna and for Srila Prabhupada on his day and really put our hearts into it, even if we're not able to be as together as much. So we may be missing some of the Sadhu Sangha, but everything else will be there. Okay, tomorrow is Janmashtami, as mentioned, and I'm sure that others will be speaking tomorrow about Krishna's appearance and the reasons for his appearance and all that, so I'm not going to try to steal their thunder, but I thought I should speak about Krishna, being that we're 7 hours away from Krishna's appearance. Of course, we always speak about Krishna, but a little bit more specifically. So I wanted to talk a little bit today. I was trying to think what I wanted to talk about. I'd just like to talk about how Krishna is so wonderful, so amazing, so beautiful, so attractive. And I think we need to always remember that. Why we became devotees of Krishna. Of course, the philosophy is there and very convincing, but why Krishna? Why is Krishna so attractive to everyone, to the Vaishnavas? So in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapter 41, Akura is bringing Krishna to Mathura, and then Krishna reveals to Akura the whole spiritual world. And of course, Akura is very just astounded. And here's what he says. Shri Kuru Vacha Abhutaniha Yavanti Bhumau Vyanti Vajale Toi Vishvatmaketani Kimme Drishtam Vipashyata. Whatever wonderful things the earth, sky, or water contain, all exist in you. Since you encompass everything, when I am seeing you, what have I not seen? And now that I'm seeing you, O Supreme Absolute Truth, in whom reside all amazing things on the earth, in the sky, and in the water, what amazing things could I see in this world? So Akura is saying, and of course, Akura is one of our exemplars. He's actually the exemplar for the process of Vandanam, of offering prayers. So very, very great devotee. Krishna is more amazing than all the amazing things in the world. And anything that we do see that is amazing and beautiful in the material world or the spiritual world comes directly from Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 10:41 says, "Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor." So we know that Krishna is the most beautiful and glorious personality, and therefore he attracts everyone. In fact, the very word Krishna, as we know, means all attractive. Prabhupada has explained this many times, and I think right from the beginning, and I remember some of the first books I read, that I remember that Prabhupada made that point very, very clearly. Krishna means all attractive. For instance, in a purport to 4.11 Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, everyone is trying to seek out Krishna directly or indirectly. Krishna means the all-attractive. So everyone is seeking Krishna, the all-attractive, right? In other words, everyone is trying to find that thing which is beautiful, which is wonderful, which attracts them in some way. Of course, there was some old song, I hate, you know, my mind's so full of anartas, but it's something like, looking for love in all the wrong places. I don't know what this, but it was something like that. That's what we're doing in the material world. We're all trying to find that thing that's attractive. We're trying to find love, but we're looking in the wrong places because we're looking for material answers rather than looking deeply at the spiritual reality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what makes someone attractive? Usually when we think of attractive, we think of beauty, and a man's very handsome, a woman's very beautiful, but it's more than that. You think about it, there are many attractive features that people possess. In a lecture of 1969, Srila Prabhupada expands upon this idea of being attractive. He says, how does a man become attractive? First of all, we have to understand that. Suppose a very rich man is attractive, a very intelligent man is attractive, a beautiful man is attractive, a famous man is attractive, a wise man is attractive, and a renounced man is also attractive. These are attractive features. So if we analyze Krishna, we find that all these six opulences of attractive men are fully present in Krishna. So even from historical references, there is not a single person who can be compared with Krishna. Therefore, he is all attractive. And everything that we experience, that is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. So Krishna is superior in qualities to all others, as all of those qualities stem from him. In other words, if he is the source of everything, then he must have all of those qualities complete in full himself. Therefore, he's able to emanate those qualities throughout material and spiritual worlds. And, of course, Krishna is known as Bhagavan. This word Bhagavan is used a lot. Even Bhagavad Gita, this word Bhagavan, Bhagavat, used very, very often, meaning the Supreme Person. But what it technically means is one who is complete in all opulences. And those opulences are listed as six: strength, beauty, wealth, knowledge, fame, and renunciation. This is explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 2.2, where he quotes Parashara Muni from the Vishnu Purana. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasaya shriya jnana vairagayaschaiva sanam bhaga itingana. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, the Supreme Personality who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are rich, powerful, beautiful, famous, learned, detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc. entirely. Only Krishna can claim this, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, this isn't just theoretical. When Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, tomorrow, more or less 5,000 years ago, he demonstrated in all of his pastimes in Vrindavan, in Mathura, and in Dwarka. He demonstrated these opulences. He showed his wealth. He had 16,108 palaces in Dwarka. And even as a cowherd boy in a rural agrarian setting of Vrindavan, he had millions and millions of cows. I mean, who can do this? It's impossible. What to speak of that he creates, maintains, so you could say he is the owner of, countless material and spiritual universes. No one's more wealthy than that. Strength, we saw, even as a baby, what, is he 6 months old when he kills the Trinavarta whirlwind demon, he kills the cart demon, when he's a baby, tiny baby, lifting Govardhan Hill, huge mountain lifts up with his little finger of his left hand, and so many pastimes like this over and over, demonstrating that he is stronger than the strongest, stronger than anyone. Famous. Prabhupada says in the POY, chapter 6, perfection of yoga. Okay, one may be famous in a family, in a town, in a country, or on one planet, but no one is famous throughout the creation as is Sri Krishna. The leaders of the world may be famous for a few years only, but only Sri Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago and is still being worshipped. Expanding this idea a little bit more, Prabhupada once said, everybody in the world, everyone in the universe knows God. Everyone knows there's a God, a supreme being. Even those who may not absolutely believe in God have heard of him. In other words, Krishna's God. Everyone has heard of him. So in that sense, he's also the most famous. I mean, there's no other personality that everyone else has heard of. I mean, before I became a devotee, I never heard of Lord Brahma, or maybe I'd heard of Lord Shiva, but I had no idea, you know. But everyone has heard of God, right? So he's the most famous. And as far as beauty, there's countless descriptions of Krishna's beauty. And I'm going to cover that a little bit later in another way of discussing Krishna's qualities. Here's just one quote from the Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. The gopis say, Krishna is the killer of the attraction of Cupid, and as such, he disturbs the patience of all the newly married girls. Krishna's bodily features have become so exquisite. It is as if they were all manifesting an artistic sense of the highest sort. His dancing eyes have dimmed the brilliance of the most expert dancer, and there's no longer any comparison to the beauty of Krishna. As I said, there's so many verses that we could see all throughout the Bhagavatam, the Nectar Devotion, throughout the Goswami's literature, where Krishna's beauty, even the Bhagavad Gita, is described over and over. As far as knowledge, Krishna is the source of all knowledge. Everything comes from him. He says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So in other words, everything is all, Veda means knowledge. All knowledge is coming from Krishna. He's the compiler. He wrote it all. You know, someone say, like a common expression, is saying, well, he's the author of that. In other words, that he's the expert. Krishna's the expert on everything. All, as he says, phenomenal and noumenal knowledge, material and spiritual. Everything is known by Krishna. Everything is spoken by Krishna. Everything is given by Krishna. Renunciation. I always thought this was interesting, because we don't usually think of, at least often, that renunciation is an opulence. But it actually is. Someone who has that capability of not being attached. In other words, someone might be the wealthiest, strongest, richest, whatever, but not particularly attached to that. One of the famous examples is the story of Krishna as the Ranchor, where he leaves the battlefield in his battle with Jarasandha. Is it Jarasandha? It's always with Jarasandha. Oh, yeah, okay. I was close, no, but not so. But so far away. Okay. At any rate, I was thinking he fought Jarasandha 21 times. I thought it must have been one of those. But at any rate, he had superior strength. He easily could have defeated them, but he just walked away from the battlefield because he had something else to do. He had a more important mission to do. He had, I think, go back to Dwork or whatever, protect people. So, in other words, it didn't matter to him. He wasn't attached to the winning, losing of the battle, or what anyone might say about it, or people would say he was, oh, why did he leave the battle? He was a coward or whatever. No, he was totally renounced. We see other examples when he was with the gopis. He had the one time when he left all the, during the Rasa dance after that, when he just left the devotees, left the gopis. Very renounced. He wasn't like, in one sense, very attached to them, but in the other sense, renounced. It's kind of a little both. That's Krishna. Krishna accomplishes everything. Prabhupada also says, this was in a lecture in Bombay in 1974, just see Bhagavan's renunciation. If we construct a building, we become attached to it. But Krishna, have you ever done something or built something or did some artwork or anything, you get real attached to it, right? You know, you'd say, oh, look what I did. But Krishna constructed the whole universe, and he still does not claim it for himself. And this is only one universe. There are millions of universes. So Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the creator of all these universes. Still, he does not come here except occasionally. And he does not claim them for himself. He has given them to you to use. You wanted to enjoy the material world? All right, I give it to you. Enjoy. Krishna creates the material world really for us. It's described that the whole material creation comes about because of the desires of living entity to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So he's not attached to any of this creation. He made it to fulfill our desires. So Krishna appears himself in this world as he does on Janmashtami, on his appearance. And when he comes, he brings all of his spiritual energies. In Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, everything is, of course, composed of unlimited spiritual energy. And his full opulence of the spiritual worlds are displayed. When he descends to earth, he also brings the whole spiritual world with him, and all of his spiritual energies and all of his spiritual opulence. He manifests his abode of Vrindavan, his energies, his power, all of his opulence, his wonderful pastimes, the same pastimes. They're enacted eternally with the eternal associates in the spiritual world and Krishna Loka. Are the same ones that he exhibits on the earth planet when he descends here. And he asked all of his associates and devotees to come to the spiritual world when he was requested by Lord Brahma, please appear on this earth because the earth has been overburdened by the demoniac kings. He said, yes, I will come. And he asked all of his devotees to come with him. He told the demigods, take birth in these families. He told all of his associates. He brought them all there. Radharani said, I can't be separated from him. He says, of course not. So you come with me. So they all come. Everyone comes with him. So his pastimes in this material world are so astonishing and so wonderful because they are his spiritual pastimes, the same pastimes of the spiritual world that are enacted here. So these pastimes are sometimes called Prakriti and Aprakriti pastimes, those that are manifest, those that are unmanifest. The ones when he displays on this earth planet like 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan are called Prakriti. Is that the right word? Prakriti. That one. Yeah. Okay. So, and of course, his unmanifested pastimes are purely spiritual. Now, they're going on eternally. For instance, his pastimes are going on in Vrindavan, India right now. When I go to Vrindavan, do I see all this happening? Do I see him playing with a cow? No. Because they're hidden to most of our vision, but they're there. In other words, the uprockers are no longer going on, but they are the same. There is no difference. So when he comes to this material world, very, very wonderful pastimes. Now, Lord Brahma states in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, that no one can count the transcendental qualities of Krishna. But yet, Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya's great, great devotee and our great acharya, one of the greatest Vaishnava acharyas in our line, he has attempted to enumerate Krishna's qualities. Going through the Bhagavatam and the other literatures, he picked out all of the different qualities that he saw. And he came up with 64 qualities. And these are found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, and of course also in Srila Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion, which is a summary study of the same work. Now, first he lists 50 qualities. And these 50 qualities are very wonderful. Everything from being kind and being poetic and being generous and being intelligent and being, all of these things. You know, remember the Boy Scouts? What, they had 10 qualities or 12 or something? Like honesty and inward reverence or something. I don't remember any of them, but I know we were supposed to learn them. But Krishna's put those to shame. He has all these wonderful qualities, and these first 50 are sometimes manifest by pure devotees. Sometimes that they're partially manifest by living entities. Because we see living entities like Srila Prabhupada exhibit many of these wonderful qualities. You know, there's the 26 qualities of devotees. And, you know, devotees have wonderful qualities. And some of them are partial, you know, qualities like Krishna's. Now, there are five that are sometimes found in Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, which are that she being changeless, all cognizant, ever fresh, Satchitananda, possessing eternal blissful body, and possessing all mystic perfections. And there's another five, now we're up to 55. The next five are found in Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, as well as Krishna. He has inconceivable potency, uncountable universes generate from his body. He is the original source of all incarnations. He's the giver of salvation to the enemies whom he kills, and he's the attractor of all liberated souls. So all of these transcendental qualities are wonderfully manifest in the features of Lord Krishna. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that even though they may be found in both Krishna and Narayan, they're particularly wonderful and they're particularly astonishing when Krishna reveals those qualities. Now that leaves us with four. So there are four special qualities only found in Krishna. And this is another reason why Krishna is all attractive. Because he has these very, very special qualities that no other personality, even other incarnations, demigods, they don't have. First, he's the performer of a wonderful variety of pastimes, and mentioned especially childhood pastimes. When you think about it, most incarnations don't really have a lot of childhood pastimes. Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, a little bit, you know, but not so much. Where, of course, Krishna in Vrindavan has huge amounts of wonderful parental pastimes, Vatsalya Rasa pastimes with Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, etc., and all of his childhood and babyhood, which was so much enjoyed, and all of his other incredible pastimes. Secondly, he's surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. In other words, the highest devotees are those of Krishna. Now, how do we say that? Not that there's anything to diminish other devotees of other forms or other incarnations. They can all be pure devotees, and they can all be experiencing love of God. But if we objectively look at Krishna's devotees, they are incredibly, incredibly, totally, 100% sacrificed, completely surrendered, completely their whole life and love and everything is totally centered on Krishna. And Krishna has this type of devotees you don't find anywhere else. Thirdly, he can attract all living entities all over the universe by playing his flute. I mean, this is just quite a thing. His flute playing is amazing. And he has a wonderful excellence of beauty, which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation. So, in the few minutes left, I'll try to talk a little bit about these. In Bhagavatam 10.7.2, King Parikshit said, "Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord." That's playing the part of the conditioned soul that we're reluctant to hear. "But Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes. One gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, attachment for him, friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord." Here's another one. This is from Nectar Devotion. One devotee has said, I know about Narayan, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and I also know about many other incarnations of the Lord. Certainly all the pastimes of such incarnations are exciting to the mind, but still the pastimes of the Rasa Lila performed by Lord Krishna himself are wonderfully increasing my transcendental pleasure. So these are very, very special pastimes that Krishna has that are not exhibited by other incarnations or other great personalities. And of course we are so fortunate that we have the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where all of these pastimes are given to us. In fact, you know, Srila Prabhupada, obviously being somewhat omniscient, prescient, being able to tell past, present, and future, probably knew he was not going to be able to finish the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he didn't. He only got through he only got through 13 chapters of the 10th canto. So way back in 1970, he gave us the Krishna book. So he gave us all of Krishna's pastimes, his summary study of the entire 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So from the very beginning, we all knew about Krishna's pastimes, and those became a great source of attraction, a great source of us developing our love, our commitment, our attraction to Krishna, and carrying on in devotional service. So the next one, and of course these Vrindavan pastimes and the 10th canto pastimes are really the most attractive to the devotees of Krishna. The devotees of Krishna are most endowed with pure love of God. When we speak of Krishna, this is what Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, when we speak of Krishna, Krishna is not alone. Krishna means his name, his qualities, his fame, his friends, his paraphernalia, his entourage, all these are included. When we speak of the king, it's to be understood, he's surrounded by ministers, secretaries, military commanders, and many other people. Similarly, Krishna is not impersonal. In his Vrindavan Leela especially, he is surrounded by the gopis, the coward boys, his father, his mother, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. In the 10th canto, 31st chapter, verse 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the gopis lament, my dear Krishna, during the daytime when you go out into the forest of Vrindavan with your cows, we consider one moment to be 12 years. Lord Chaitanya also said that. And it's very difficult for us to pass the time. And again, when you come back at the end of the day by seeing your beautiful face, we are so much attracted that we are unable to stop looking upon you constantly. At these times, when there's occasional blinking of our eyelids, we condemn the Creator, Lord Brahma, as a dunce, because he does not know how to make perfect eyes. In other words, the gopis were disturbed by the blinking of their eyes because for a moment their eyes were closed and they could not see Krishna. This means the gopis' love for Krishna was so great and ecstatic, they were disturbed even by its momentary absence. And when they saw Krishna, they were also disturbed. This is a paradox. Why were they disturbed? Because thinking that they would soon lose his association at some point. So in other words, this tremendous desire to always see Krishna, always be with him, is part of what has been described as the special quality of his devotees, of how dedicated Krishna's devotees are to him. Third one is Krishna attracts all living entities by playing his flute. In the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, there is a series of verses that is called the Venu Gita. Now, what is that? Gita means song, of course, and so there's actually four Gitas in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. These are poetic expressions of the gopis' love. So there's the Venu Gita, this one, and the 21st chapter, gopis glorifying Krishna's flute. The Gopi Gita is chapter 31, the gopis in separation when Krishna leaves them. Then the Yugala Gita is chapter 35, the gopis singing of Krishna wandering in the forest. And then chapter 47 is the Bhramara Gita, the song of the bee, Radharani speaking to the bumblebee. So these are especially nice poetic expressions of this wonderful love, particularly the gopis who are considered to be the topmost devotees of Lord Krishna. So I'm going to read some of these verses. These are all from the Venu Gita in chapter 21, spoken by the gopis. O friend, Vrindavan is spreading the glory of the earth. having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Devaki. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and when other creatures see them from the hilltops, they all become stunned. Blessed are all these foolish deer, because they have approached Maharaj Nanda's son, who is gorgeously dressed and playing on his flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of affection. Krishna's beauty and character create a festival for all women. Indeed, when the demigods' wives fly in the airplanes with their husbands, catch sight of him and hear his resonant flute song, their hearts are shaken by Cupid, and they become so bewildered the flowers fall, their hair and their belts loosen. Using their upraised ears as vessels, the cows are drinking the nectar of the flute song flowing out of Krishna's mouth. The calves, their mouths full of milk from their mother's moist nipples, stand still as they take Govinda within themselves through their tear-filled eyes and embrace him within their hearts. O Mother, in this forest all the birds have risen onto the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. With closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibrations of his flute, and they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely these birds are on the same level as great sages. They actually were. When the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him, and thus the flow of their currents is broken, and their waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet, and holding on to them, present offerings of lotus flowers. In the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, Lord Krishna is continually vibrating his flute as he herds all the animals of Raja, even under the full heat of the summer sun. Seeing this, the cloud in the sky has expanded itself out of love. He is rising high and constructing out of his own body with this multitude of flower-like droplets of water, an umbrella for the sake of his friend. My dear friends, as Krishna and Balaram pass through the forest with their cowherd friends leading their cows, they carry ropes to bind the cow's rear legs at the time of milking. When Lord Krishna plays on his flute, the sweet music causes the moving living entities to become stunned and the non-moving trees to tremble with ecstasy. These things are certainly wonderful. In other words, the moving living entities became stunned and the non-moving all moved around. The trees started dancing. So these wonderful things occurred in Vrindavan with the by the playing of Krishna's flute. Okay, I did something I shouldn't have done. Okay, here we go. The fourth one, unrivaled beauty anywhere in the creation. In the third canto, second chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 12, Uddhava tells Vidura, "My dear sir, Krishna's form was most wonderful when he appeared on this planet and exhibited the potency of his internal energy. His wonderfully attractive form was present during his pastimes on this planet, and by his internal potency, he exhibited his opulences, which are striking to everyone. His personal beauty was so great, there was no necessity for his wearing ornaments on his body. In fact, instead of the ornaments beautifying Krishna, Krishna's beauty enhanced the ornaments." In Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava, it is said, one day, this is all from Nectar Devotion, one day Krishna happened to see the shadow of his beautiful form reflected on the jeweled foreground. Upon seeing this bodily reflection, he expressed his feelings. "How wonderful it is that I have never seen such a beautiful form. Although it is my own form, still, like Radharani, I'm trying to embrace this form and enjoy celestial bliss." This statement shows how Krishna and his shadow reflection are one and the same. There's no difference between Krishna and his reflection, nor Krishna and his picture. This is the transcendental position of Krishna. The above statements describe some of the wonderful reservoirs of pleasure within Krishna, as well as the transcendental qualities of his personality. The transcendental qualities of Krishna are compared to the ocean. No one can estimate the length and the breadth of the ocean, but as one can understand the ocean's contents simply by testing one drop of it, so these statements will give us some understanding of Krishna's transcendental position and qualities. So we can never fully understand the astonishing glories of Krishna, fully understand his beauty, his opulences, but we can appreciate as much as we can, hearing from the scriptures, hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing from the Acharyas and from Srila Prabhupada. And I'll end with last verse here. Lord Brahma speaking, after stealing the boys and cows, when he's offering his prayers, 14th chapter, verse 7, Ganatmana stepi gunam vimutam hita virtanasya kaisharesha kalena yarva vimita sakalpayar upamsava ke mihika jubasa. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has descended onto the surface of this earth for the benefit of all living entities? Jai. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I just read was 10:14:7. Yeah.
Also in the Purport it says that on that verse, in the Purport it says that Krishna gave a particular quality for each jiva, living entity.
Yes, I remember that was quoted from Sanatana Goswami's commentary.
Correct.
Sanatana Goswami says that in the purport to this verse that Krishna comes with a unique quality for every living entity. As many living entities as are, Krishna manifests a different quality for each of us. It's amazing. Krishna is simply amazing. Sorry. Hari Bol. Happy Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja. Glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Do you have any question, comments?
Maybe there's a couple minutes.
Prabhu. Very nice to explain how Krishna is all attractive, but we encounter many people who are not all attracted to Krishna. So could you explain why, although Krishna is all attractive, there exist many people in this world who
are not
all attracted to Krishna?
It's a mystery, isn't it? How could the people not be attracted to Krishna? That's all about desire. It has to do with our desires. If one wants to be separate from Krishna, try to enjoy in this material world separately, enjoy all of Krishna's properties separately, you know, and then one couldn't be very attracted to Krishna because then one had have to give up one's position, right? So, yes, the living entities tend to, in the material world, under the influence of Maya and the modes of nature, not understand Krishna, not be attracted to Krishna, because it lets them maintain their position of trying to be Krishna themselves, trying to enjoy separately. That's my best understanding of it.
And you also answered in the beginning, you said, Prabhupada said, directly or indirectly, they are all...
Well,
so indirectly, they are looking for pleasure. That is Krishna also, Prabhupada said.
Yeah.
So they are actually attracted to Krishna, that just they don't know.
And in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna explains all his vibhutis,
yes, 10:40,
right? You know,
yes,
it's saying, "I am this, I am the taste and water, I am the light of the sun and the moon." So people are appreciating the attractiveness of Krishna, but indirectly, I guess. That's thank you for reminding me of that. That's good. Anything else? Yes, how did you?
1 second. You have to keep the mask on.
I was so happy that there was one thing that you didn't mention about Krishna that I especially find bewildering and wonderful. And that is, I think this is in Krishna book, I'm not a scholar, where he gets up in the morning, because that's early, to meditate. And what does Krishna meditate on?
Himself.
Himself?
Yep.
Because what else is there for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to meditate on?
Yes.
But when he sits there in meditation upon himself, he becomes bewildered because even he cannot fathom the vastness of everything and all that he is. Mm-hmm. So when I think of the Supreme Personality becoming bewildered by his own greatness, it just is a sense of joy for me to think that he's a personality. I get bewildered. Hey, there's one thing that bewilders. Oh, he's bewildered by the love of the gopis and all of that too. But
there is one difference between us and Krishna's bewilderment. Well, it's probably a lot of differences. But one that comes to mind immediately is, of course, you know, we're usually bewildered just because we're bewildered, you know, by lots of things in the material world and our minds like that. Krishna's bewilderment comes about by his yoga maya. He employs yoga maya to actually cause some covering, some bewilderment, to enhance the pleasure of his pastimes and his relationships with his devotees. So it's just like, you know, when Krishna's, you know, playing that he's a little baby and Mother Yashoda, you know, he's not sitting there, you know, I'm actually Mahavishnu, I'm actually the creator of everything, but I've got to play this little role that I'm a baby with this woman. No, he's totally into it. He's enjoying it. He's allowing Yoga Maya to sort of cover him to the degree that he can really get into the part, you know? Yeah, of course, he's the creator of Yoga Maya, too. So, you know, ultimately, he's in control of everything. You know, but that's my understanding. And a lot of his pastimes, especially when you get into the pastimes with the gopis and like that, he displays a lot of very human-like emotion, where he's feeling sorrow, where he's feeling bad. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is he going to become overwhelmed with, not in the same way we would, but, you know, in a very transcendental way to enhance the loving relationship and enhance the pastimes. That seems to be my understanding, again, this is just, you know, my tiny realization, is Krishna's whole sort of emotional take on everything has to do with increasing loving pastimes, increasing rasa, increasing relationships. So even if he appears this or appears that, it's usually for that sake. You know. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Great question. All right. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.